This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. I'm always happy to have our guest on the show because in the world of health and well-being, hearsay and speculation often drive our actions. There are things we want to believe so that we can support our bad habits. What we need is a reality check. Well, want no more. Our good friend Dr. Michael Greger is here to share facts and nothing but. This man reviews every scientific research study available in the English language to separate fact from fiction and then shares what he's learned on his amazing website, nutritionfacts.org. No more hearsay, no more speculation, just science. Dr. Greger, welcome back to HeartWise.
So glad to be back.
Let's begin with an odd study. Apparently, vegan women, those who eat no animal products, produce children differently from their meat-eating counterparts. Care to explain that?
Well, you know, foods of animal origin, in general, you know, naturally contain hormones, you know, organic or not. But cow's milk may be a particular concern, and that's because that's what may be behind the link between cow's milk consumption and a number of problems, such as teenagers' acne, prostate cancer, breast cancer, ovarian, uterine cancers. You know, many of these chronic diseases, as well as male reproductive disorders, even been associated with increased risk of early puberty in young women, endometrial cancer, older women. But, you know, hormonal levels may be particularly dangerous in the case of vulnerable populations, such as young children or pregnant women. You know, in these critical populations, even a small hormonal intake could lead to kind of major changes in our metabolism. Children highly sensitive to these so-called sex steroids. You know, because there's no real threshold for this kind of estrogenic action to be established, really need to, you know, caution when exposing folks to these levels. Recently, in the American Medical Association's Pediatrics Journal, the chair of Boston Children's Hospital, their obesity prevention center, as well as the chair of Harvard's Nutrition Department, you know, they've been questioning dairy industry recommendations that children should be drinking this dairy milk. Mm-hmm. You know, and they note that, look, you know, dairy milk evolved to kind of promote the growth of these grazing animals at high risk for predation when small. So when you need to put a couple hundred pounds on in the first few months of life, right, then cow's milk is natural for the calf. But, you know, the consequences of lifetime human exposure to these growth factors in milk, you know, has not been well studied. There's kind of real concern, particularly since pregnant cows excrete significantly higher levels of these sex steroids into their milk than non-pregnant cows. And we keep them pregnant, obviously, to keep them churning out milk. So it kind of presents this unnecessary risk. And so, you know, what's the consequences of consuming all this estrogen? Well, there's a study of over 1,000 women eating plant-based diets, and vegan women had a so-called twinning rate. That's one-fifth that of vegetarians and omnivores, meaning vegan women have five times lower risk of having twins. Now, why do I say risk? The reason that's a good thing is because twin pregnancies are actually risky pregnancies. Complications are more likely to occur. You know, many people, I think, you know, both parents and physicians underestimate the potential dangers of multiple pregnancies. Mm. It's a greater risk for the moms, greater risk for the infants. Twin babies 10 times more likely to die at birth. You know, so, I mean, to avoid these complications, the research team recommends that women attempting conception, so even before they're pregnant, should really avoid milk and dairy products to have the highest likelihood of a safe pregnancy.
Hmm. So also another take-home message I get from this, unless you are wanting to raise a three-year-old sumo wrestler, stay away from milk. Am I right?
Even a three-month-old sumo wrestler. I mean, it's really, we got to add a couple hundred pounds very soon. You know, but that's what's kind of Mother Nature designed us to do. And so to think that we can, you know, just kind of cross species and whether we're, you know, trying to drink elephant milk or donkey milk or cow milk, it's just we're picking the wrong species.
Because mother milk does the very same thing. It promotes growth and puts on weight, but at a measured rate as opposed to these other sources you're saying.
Exactly, at the rate that's designed, right? Yes, so rats grow at a certain rate. They only live a few years. Mm-hmm. You know, cows grow at a completely different rate. Humans grow at a different rate. And so human babies need human milk. So we should all kind of stick to the way that we were designed.
Stick to our own species. Okay. Now, another study talking about fruit and fructose. Now, fructose, of course, is a sweetener. What's the difference between the fructose and the fruit it comes from?
Right, so there actually is fructose in both things that are bad for you, like table sugar and high fructose corn syrup, these so-called industrial sugars. But this exact same fructose that's found in fruit. You say, well, wait a second. If fructose is bad in these processed foods when it's added, what about fruit? So we're worried about liver damage in particular, but it turns out only the added industrial sugars are associated with declining kidney function, not fruit consumption. So fruit from added sugars associated with high blood pressure, but fructose from natural fruit, not. What's interesting is they do these studies where if you give people a glass of water with some table sugar in it, you know, like a can of soda or something, and you get this big spike in blood sugar. So your body kind of freaks out, releases so much insulin that we actually overshoot. Our blood sugar drops actually too low. We become hypoglycemic. And so in response, our body dumps all this fat into our bloodstream as if we're starving, because all of a sudden our blood sugars drop lower than they should be normally when we're fasting. And so that's our body's reaction. It's like we're on a desert island or something. That's why there's all these negative consequences to eating these added sugars like table sugar, high fructose corn syrup. But what if you repeat that experiment, but you added blended berries in addition to the sugar? So if you took a soda, the same soda, but you added blended berries. Now, look, berries have sugar on their own,
Yes.
And so you'd think the blood sugar spike of drinking this soda with the berries would be even higher because you just had more sugar. But no, you don't get an additional sugar spike. In fact, you get a blunted spike, and you get no dip afterwards. The blood sugar just goes up and down like it should. You don't get that overshoot. You don't get that surge of fat in your blood, so you don't get the negative consequences. And the reason is because there's fiber in the berries. There's fiber in fruit that slows the absorption of the sugars. And there's actually phytonutrients within whole fruits that actually block the absorption of sugars at the intestinal lining barrier into your bloodstream. And so all these combination effects, it actually improves your blood sugar. So diabetics should be eating fruit. And the more fruit, the better, particularly these so-called low glycemic fruits like berries, to help stabilize their blood sugar.
You know, Dr. Greger, we come to depend on the media to sort of guide us through. And I saw in my mailbox a very popular magazine. On the cover was butter. And it says, boy, you need butter to be healthy. What was your reaction when you saw that?
Well, you know, these are the kind of things that, you know, there's these cycles. These kind of low-carb, I mean, it makes news, it sells a magazine. First thing I thought when I saw that is, oh, the poor magazine industry. Like, how desperate you have to be. Look, these print publications are going out of business.
Yes,
even major newspapers are going out of business. Yes. So you slap some crazy story on it, and it gets people to, you know, to buy your magazine in the last dwindling days. But if you actually look at the science, I mean, look, they're actually talking about an actual review paper published in a prestigious journal, but you have to dig a little deeper to see what's actually going on. Turns out in 2008, Global Dairy Industry held this meeting where they, and this is actually that we have internal documents actually from the meeting that say that they all decided to, quote, neutralize the negative impacts of MilFat by regulators and medical professionals, unquote. This is what they set out to do. So what did they do? They pooled their money, did this major well-founded campaign to come up with some kind of proof that saturated fat does not cause heart disease. So they got they paid scientists to speak at scientific meetings. They made scientific publications come out, all since this meeting in Mexico City that they had back in 2008. And this is one of the consequences. They designed a study to get the result that they wanted at the end. This is something you see coming out of the tobacco industry. This is just, I mean, this is just kind of standard, you know, corporate spin practices. It's so sad to see it happening in the kind of academic circles. But if you go to the most prestigious medical institutions, whether it's American Heart Association or the Institute of Medicine, National Academy of Sciences, or the kind of the European FDA, or any kind of major nutrition guidelines body, they all recommend a reduction of saturated fat. In fact, Institute of Medicine and European Food Safety Authority recommend as low as possible. So push saturated fat consumption absolutely down. The only safe intake is zero. I mean, where are these saturated fats found? Predominantly meat and dairy. also some found in eggs, also some found in tropical oils like palm kernel oil, which is found in a lot of junk foods, so we want to stay away from that too. But saturated fat is bad for us, trans fats are bad for us, dietary cholesterol is bad for us, and no matter how much money is pumped by these junk food industries and to try to twist the science, to introduce doubt, the nutrition community is smarter than that, but unfortunately these popular press publications try to seize on these outliers and try to make a big deal out of it.
That's why I like to visit nutritionfacts.org. Nutrition facts, not speculation, not money-sponsored studies, but scientific studies. Nutritionfacts.org. We're talking with Dr. Michael Greger, the director behind that website. We'll take a short break. When we come back, Dr. Greger, I want to talk about some diets here, paleo and Mediterranean. People are just looking at these things, wondering, is that the way I should go? We'll find out what the facts tell us on our return, so stay right where you are. At any given moment, the sun is shining on an ADRA project. The Adventist Development and Relief Agency International operates in 125 countries. When the sun rises over Africa, ADRA is there, delivering life-saving food, digging wells, training farmers in the latest technologies to assure a good harvest. While South America basks in the noonday sun, we see ADRA workers in Peru distributing emergency supplies to earthquake victims and finding homes for street children in Brazil. As the sun slips toward the horizon in Asia, there's ADRA, rebuilding homes and schools in the wake of natural disasters. To be a part of this amazing global ministry, pick up the phone and call this number, 1-800-424-ADRA. That's 1-800-424-2372. Or visit www.adra.org. ADRA, changing the world one life at a time.
I'd like to think that one day, when we get to heaven, we're going to see a list of people. People like Jared and Susan, who were introduced to Jesus because of something we said. Or maybe it was as simple as a passing smile. But these people will look into their past and be able to say, I'm here because of you. Recently, you may have heard that Heartwise Ministries has begun spreading the gospel to the young, the old, the sick, and the healthy. We want to take this type of medical programming to the non-believer and the person who has closed themselves off to traditional forms of outreach. If you believe as we do and want to support Heartwise so that together we can count more names on the Tree of Life, please consider donating today at heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today is Dr. Michael Greger. He is the driving force behind nutritionfacts.org. He is an author and a speaker, and he works for the Humane Society of this country. And this man wants us to know what is the truth. I'm calling today's program Reality Check because what he is saying is real, based on scientific evidence. And nowhere do we need more science, Dr. Greger, than in the area of what we put in our bodies. And there are two diets out there that seem to be getting a lot of press and a lot of attention. That is the paleo diet and the Mediterranean diet. Let's start with paleo. What's your take on that? No, let me say it this way. What's science take on the paleo diet?
The whole kind of theory behind the paleo diet is that our epidemics of dietary disease stem from this kind of disconnect between how our bodies kind of evolved since the times of antiquity, using the kind of traditional theory of human evolution over the last 2 million years, compared to kind of what we're stuffing our face with today, advocating for this return towards this more kind of hunter-gatherer diet of kind of lean meat, fruits, vegetables, and nuts. But if one is going to use their own scientific rationale, if one is going to say, okay, theory of evolution, 2 million years is the Paleolithic period, well, that same theory posits that humans have been evolving from 25 million years since the common great ape ancestor. And so that 2 million years, the Paleolithic hunter-gatherer period, is just the last 10% of human evolution. What about the first 90%? And that first 90% is what we're eating, what the rest of the great apes were eating, which is 95%+ plants. And so that makes explain why we're so susceptible to heart disease. You know, for most of our time on this planet, cholesterol is virtually absent from the diet. No bacon, butter, trans fats, massive amounts of fiber, which pull cholesterol out of the body. Now, of course, we need a certain amount of cholesterol, so our bodies make it, but we didn't just make it. We were designed to preserve it, to recycle it, right? Our body's really designed to hold on to cholesterol. So if you think of the human body as this cholesterol-conserving machine, and then you plop it down in the modern world of bacon, eggs, cheese, chicken, pork, and pastry, right? Well, then no wonder artery clogging heart disease is our number one cause of death. Right, what used to be so adaptive for us, holding on to cholesterol at all costs because we ain't getting any in our diet, is today maladaptive, a liability leading to clogging of our arteries. Our bodies just basically can't handle it. If we're kind of designed to eat mostly fruit, green seeds for 90%, and we didn't really adapt to meat eating until just the last snapshot, there just hasn't been enough time to get used to all this extra saturated fat and cholesterol. And a lifetime of eating like we eat now clogs up nearly everyone's arteries. But if you want to find a population that doesn't die of these chronic diseases, you don't have to go back a million years. We have the 20th century. There's networks of missionary hospitals set up in rural Africa that found coronary artery disease virtually absent, not just heart disease, high blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, common cancers, on down the list, absent. What were these populations in rural China and rural Africa eating? Yeah. Mostly this diet of almost exclusively plant foods. And so that's how our bodies work. Our bodies are fueled on plants, and that's what we need to eat to make these chronic diseases not be inevitable with age.
You know, Dr. Greger, as I hear you talk and describe this paleo idea, as a Christian, I'm thinking, well, yeah, that is right. We did come from a very different way of eating. We were created to eat plants, according to what the Bible says. We were created to live a very different life. And so what they're saying, even though I may not agree with the evolutionary process as they describe it, I totally believe what they're saying. The bottom line is we came from a way of eating that was very different from today. And as we are moving away from that creation diet, we are certainly suffering the unbenefits of doing that. And so it really underlines for me my Christian stance that God created us to eat a certain way. We're not doing that, and we're suffering because of it. Now, there's another diet out here, Dr. Greger, the Mediterranean diet. There's even a recent book written by people that are saying this is the way we should go. If we just go back to, you know, drinking a little bit of wine and being very careful with what we eat here, we're going to be just fine. What do you say on that?
Well, you know, the traditional Mediterranean diet was mainly vegetarian, lots of greens, lots of vegetables, similar to Chinese food. Like, there's no such thing as General Tso's chicken in China, right? This is like orange chicken, these deep fried chunks of, that's not Chinese cuisine. It's kind of an Americanized version. Same things happen with Mediterranean. So there's some real wonderful qualities, has lots of vegetables, but there are some problematic nutritional aspects. So, look, it's a lot of white bread, white pasta, not a lot of whole grains. Alcohol can be a problem. The caloric density, all that oil, too many calories, as well as the salt intake. Really, these are the things that are the major components of the Mediterranean diet that don't do so well. You know, we kind of have the traditional Mediterranean diet, which actually had unprocessed cereals. They actually use whole grains. But now it's, you know, dipping, you know, white bread and olive oil. Yeah. And that's not really getting back to the foundation, which was, you know, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, beans, low in saturated fat. Look, grapes are wonderful, and there's these wonderful grape phytonutrients in red wine that can improve arterial function, but only if it's de-alcoholized red wine. So if you have red wine that has the alcohol removed, then you can actually get an improvement in artery function. But you drink the same red wine with the alcohol added back to it, it abolishes the beneficial effect. It counteracts the benefits of the grape phytonutrients. So better to just eat grapes. And, you know, similar things with extra virgin olive oil. That's actually a fruit juice. The fruit is the olive. You squeeze the olive. Out comes juice. It's a very oily juice. But again, we always want to try to eat whole foods, foods as grown, foods as placed on this planet. And unfortunately, you often don't get that with kind of this modern version of the Mediterranean diet. And finally, sodium intake. We have good evidence linking salt intake with high blood pressure, heart disease, strokes. That's another problem often with kind of this modern Mediterranean diet. No main Mediterranean meal back in the 50s, where they actually found really good health among those that lived on the Isle of Crete, they've considered no meal was complete without lots of greens. And so I think that's a key part of a good Mediterranean diet, but really part of any good diet at all. Eat lots of green leafy vegetables, and we can learn a lot from the Mediterranean. Eat lots of legumes, beans, peas, lentils, split peas, chickpeas. They took that healthy diet and turned it into white spaghetti with meatballs, and unfortunately we're losing a lot of the benefits.
You know, I was very happy to see one of your reports. It makes me happy every morning when I have my big bowl of steel-cut oatmeal. And one of your studies was on, one of the studies that you reviewed was on the subject of oatmeal, not only what it does inside, but what it does outside. Share with our listeners what in the world oatmeal can do for us outside of our body.
This was one of the most surprising studies I actually saw all year. Now, you know, oatmeal has been used kind of for centuries as this kind of topical soothing agent on the skin. You think of like oatmeal packs and oatmeal lotions to relieve itch and irritation. You know, dry skin, bug bites, something like that. Okay, a little soothing quality. But this study came out that really shocked me. There's this class of chemotherapy drugs. Like this drug cetuximab, which causes an awful rash. It's bad enough you have some horrible cancer, but this painful, itchy rash on top of it, and they've tried everything. They try these powerful steroids. Nothing seems to get rid of it. In fact, many people actually have to stop the therapy just because it's so uncomfortable. They can't get enough sleep. So there's nothing they can do to prevent it or cure it until researchers, you know, were digging back in the literature to try to find anything to help these people. There's a study that used these isolated skin fragments from plastic surgery. You know, if someone gets a tummy tuck and they take away part of the tummy, well, they don't just throw it away. They give it to researchers to experiment. And if you take pieces of human skin and you put an inflammatory chemical on them, then you add various things to see what helps. And adding an oatmeal extract really did seem to help. So they said, look, what do they got to lose? There's no downside of oatmeal. Right? It's just oatmeal. So they took 10 patients with these horrible chemotherapy rashes, gave them some oatmeal lotion, and there was 100% response rate. In six of them, the rash completely went away. Four of them, it got better. Other researchers have since duplicated the results, replicated the results. So we have this inexpensive, natural approach to relieving these kind of distressing symptoms. And it's like almost magic. You see these before and after pictures, like I put in the videos, and it's really quite striking. And it really leads you to think, wow, if it's so powerful, anti-inflammatory on your skin, you wonder what applying oatmeal to our insides as well during breakfast might do.
That's what I was wondering this morning when I was eating. I said, Dr. Greger has told me the good things about oatmeal. And I looked at my oatmeal. I said, now go down there and do your thing. Go down there and just get to work.
Yeah, so oats have been found to have these drug-like qualities, like lowering cholesterol and blood sugar, boosting your immune system, anti-cancer, antioxidant, anti-heart disease. It can help control alcohol, asthma, body weight. People think there's drugs and then there's food. And, you know, food just sustains us. But, you know, where do most of these drugs come from, right? Where does aspirin come from? It comes from willow bark. Many of these drugs come from the plant kingdom. It should be no surprise that plants can have powerful effects on our bodies to help us.
All right, Dr. Michael Greger from nutritionfacts.org. It is a searchable website. You can hear our information and reports very much like you're hearing on this radio here. Just point your browser to nutritionfacts.org and enjoy. Dr. Greger, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Anytime. Can't wait to come back.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Dr. Michael Greger inviting you to remain hurtwise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.